that Racine has received a $200,000 brownfields planning grant from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. The grant will be used to fund a study of potential new uses for brownfield tracts of land within that corridor. Lake Geneva residents and tourists alike are enjoying a holiday, sort of, long before Memorial Day rolls around. WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure reports that a parking ticket holiday is now in effect in Lake Geneva through the end of March.
It won't take much getting used to for many who had hoped to avoid the parking fees downtown. All they have to do is park in any metered spot or parking lot free of charge. Lake Geneva Mayor Jim Connor says it's all part of a package of changes he proposed and a new ordinance that takes full effect April 1st when ticketing begins anew. Under the new rules, metered street and parking lot spaces will be free again come November 15th through the end of February in 2016. The changes eliminate two-hour daily free parking that had been an off-season effect from November through the end of April. When parking tickets return April 1st, the fee will rise from $12 to $20. The changes are meant to eliminate confusion and cut costs. Jim McClure, WGTD News.
However, free parking in Lake Geneva in March doesn't mean free everywhere. Police will still ticket anyone who illegally parks in handicapped spots or near fire hydrants. 11 minutes after 8, just ahead of the morning show with Greg Berg. Let's check WGTD Sports and Weather. NBA, the Bucks beat Orlando 97-91. Bulls beat Philadelphia in overtime 104-95. Tonight, the Bucks play Indiana. The Bulls are off. National Hockey League, the Blackhawks play Arizona. And there are AA boys basketball sectional high school games around the state tonight. These teams in the WGTD listening area will be in action. Kenosha Indian Trail, Racine Case, Wilmot, East Troy, Racine St. Catherine, and Williams Bay. And a reminder, the Indian Trail Madison Memorial game will be carried live on WGTD and on gatewaysportsweb.org. Tip-off for that game, 7 o'clock. Now the WGTD forecast from the National Weather Service on this Thursday, March the 12th. Sunny, breezy, and mild, a high of 53 degrees inland, cooler near Lake Michigan. Right now, sunshine, temperatures are slowly moving up. 32 degrees Racine, 31 Kenosha, 28 for Burlington, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 12 minutes after 8, the morning show with Greg Berg up next.
And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. Well, it's that time again, once a month, and Nan Calvert is here representing, among other things, the United Environmental Council. And Nan always has a way of rousting out of the bushes an interesting guest to join us on the morning show to talk about matters environmental. And we have a guest that joins us all the way from the far north of Milwaukee. And his name is Andy Yencha, and he is with the Milwaukee County UW Extension Office, their regional natural resources educator, I should say, for this particular region of Wisconsin. Nan, first of all, before we officially welcome Andy, tell us how you first even came to know him.
Oh my gosh, Andy is so famous in his own right. Andy and I got to know each other when we were working together with Root Pike Wynn on the Rain Garden Initiative. And we did lots of things together to educate people about how to treat water as a valuable resource rather than as a waste product. So runoff was channeled into rain gardens and rain barrels and educating people about how to manage things on their properties so that we keep water where it's supposed to be. And I was just mentioning to Andy that I've always known him in the context of water. So it's actually very appropriate to have him here today because everything is thawing and melting and spring is here. And you can see the effects of, what's been done that's a good and efficient thing to manage stormwater runoff or not. But that's not actually what we're here to talk about today. Andy has other things to wax eloquently about.
And all related to water. So we have our own Aquaman here. Yes. in the studios. Andy Yencha, we welcome you. Good to have you here. Before we start talking about more professional matters, let's find out a little bit more about who you are, where you come from originally, and when you first began getting so interested in water.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you.
Well, tip that up a little, if you would.
Thank you both, Nan and Greg. I've been in Wisconsin for a very long time now, well over 20 years, but I'm not a native. I grew up in Pennsylvania, northeastern Pennsylvania, and came to Wisconsin back in the mid-'80s to attend college at Northland College, way up north in Ashland. And spent 4 years there getting a biology degree, a bachelor's in biology. And then I went on to get a master's degree in environmental science and policy from UW Green Bay. So Lake Superior to Lake Michigan. And after leaving Green Bay, I worked for Door County for a while as a conservation technician. And then got my job with Extension, where I've been for the last 21 years, based in Milwaukee the whole time, working in southeast Wisconsin the whole time, focused mostly on water quality and increasingly water quantity issues. And maybe I can talk more about the difference between those two as we get farther along. I thought it might be helpful to just talk a little bit about Extension. That's my employer. Because I know from being with the organization so long and doing a lot of programs that people are confused, and understandably so, about the nature of our organization. So Extension, Cooperative Extension, is what I'm talking about, because there are different branches of Extension within the university system. But Cooperative Extension is the one I think people are very familiar with. Maybe the one they're most familiar with is Wisconsin Public Radio, which is a part of Extension. But next to that, it's Cooperative Extension, which is the county-based system that really is the embodiment of the Wisconsin idea that the university's boundaries are the boundaries of the state. So what that means is in Wisconsin, and other states have similar systems, we try to have an Extension presence in every county, all 72. So in Kenosha, many people who are listening are probably familiar with the Kenosha County office out in Bristol. That's an example of our county presence. Now, I'm not a county educator. I'm a regional educator. In addition to those county offices, we have what are called centers that support them. And these centers are often campus-based, but not always. I happen to be housed in a center called the Environmental Resources Center, which is on the UW-Madison campus. And that's kind of my home base. And that allows me to do the regional work I do. So maybe I should stop there and see if you all have any questions or want to chime in.
As you were explaining that, it reminded me that a lot of times we think about that word UW Extension, mm-hmm. and we just don't think about why that word is even used, but it's actually a beautiful word, and it nicely embodies actually what this effort is all about, extending the benefits of the UW system beyond the walls of school buildings and classrooms.
You said it. Yeah, that's the idea. So my job over all these years has been to try to help local people understand the environmental issues that they and their communities face, mostly related to water. I do a little bit of forestry programming, but also the communities they're in, working with local units of government. And that's what the program I came to talk about today is really all about. It's called the Wisconsin Water Star Program. And it was not started by me. It was started by a colleague of mine who had been in environmental management communications for a long time and sort of recognized that in this field we're very... very used to looking for things that are wrong. We're always pointing out what can you do better, whether it's talking to a farmer or looking at a city and trying to show that city how they could better manage their water resources. So my colleague had the brilliant idea of kind of saying, let's build a program that twists that around. Let's instead of pointing out things that could be better, let's reward municipalities for what they're doing right. And if they're doing enough things right, let's really honor them and call them stars. And so she came up with this idea of a water star recognition for municipalities, that's towns, cities, villages, and counties. We include counties in that definition, even though they're not traditionally thought of as a municipality. Why not honor those local units of government with a designation of being a water star if they are doing work above and beyond what's required by state and local laws?
This sounds a little, Dan, like what we've talked about on the program before for certain communities when it comes to, for instance, fostering the flourishing of bird populations,
right.
Bird cities or something?
Exactly. The bird city designations that we, you know, if you go in and around Racine and Kenosha counties, you'll see those designations. So it's a really good thing.
Yeah.
Because Andy's right. We tend to focus on the things that aren't being done rather than the things that are being done. And that just seems to be human nature. And it's not a bad thing because you do need to sort of, you know, tighten up the ship, as it were, but to recognize people and groups and government entities that are doing the right thing really encourages other people to get up to speed.
So it's a way to kind of turn the doom and gloom thing on its head a little bit.
Right.
When was this created?
The program launched in 2010. There were 3 years of planning that went in prior to that. But in 2010, the application, which is a web-based application, anyone who wants to see it can just Google Wisconsin Water Star or just type right into your URL line there, waterstarwisconsin.org, and you'll find it. That online application launched in 2010, and it's been going ever since. It's been great. The participation the program got initially was just fantastic. I think we took in like 12 communities right away, became water stars. Many of these communities were ones that had helped develop the application. And since then, we've been getting applicants, although the trend has slowed down a little bit. I think the low-hanging fruit, so to speak, has been picked, and we need to do a better job reaching out to more rural parts of the state of Wisconsin to get more interest. But right now we're up to 30. We have 30 water stars.
Wow. So give us some sense of that criterion. What is involved in qualifying to be a water star? And what kind of communities are we talking about? I mean, are we talking about municipalities as large as the city of Milwaukee and as down to tiny little villages? Or?
Well, they're all eligible. Any local unit of municipal government and counties can apply. The program is really targeted at smaller communities because I didn't really get to this part of the vision that the creators had, but the idea was that your larger communities have more resources to hire professional consultants to help them address some of their water management issues. But smaller communities don't have those resources. So WaterStar has a three-part mission statement to guide, inspire, and recognize. And the guide part is the idea that by creating this network across the state of WaterStars, they will, through kind of natural positive peer pressure, encourage other communities to begin thinking more about how they do their water resource management. You know, a sharing will take place. Now, we have not evaluated this in any kind of scientific way, but we do a webinar program, you know, a computer broadcasted show once a month to try to keep that network going. But let me get to the application and really quickly, just if there's any municipalities listening out there, I'd love to have you apply. and we do have one in the listening area here. Bristol is a water star. They are a bronze water star. So there's three levels of recognition, and they are based on how many points you get after filling out the application. If you get between 50% and 60% of the points that are available, you're a bronze, 60 to 70, a silver, and above 70% of the points that are available, you become a gold water star. Most of our communities are bronze. It does take a lot of extra above and beyond what's required by law type work to get the silver or gold designations. Boy, without boring people to death, I'll just say that the application was designed and is very comprehensive. So it just doesn't say, look at how are you managing your stormwater, or how are you managing your drinking water, or how are you managing, how I should say not you as individuals, but how is your community managing those aspects of the water that is cycling through our environment all the time. It looks at all those things. So the application has 16 sections, and I'm just looking at them in front of me right now. I'll just mention a few that are obvious. One would be your water supply. How is your community taking care of the drinking water that you get? And your wastewater. So when you're done with that water that you get from the water utility, how's the wastewater utility doing at cleaning that up? So those are two obvious ones. Some less obvious ones, but maybe not so much so, would be stormwater management. And then we get into some areas that maybe people don't think of when it comes to water. Administration. How does the administration view water resources as part of their responsibilities? Do they encourage public involvement in the management of local water resources? If they do, they're not required to do that, but if they do, we give points. So right on down the line, land use, water conservation in public buildings, emergency management is another one that people often don't think of. So these are examples of kind of the different sections. Within each section, there are questions. Depending on how you answer those questions, you get points. And like I said, if you get enough points, you can qualify.
So this is essentially on the honor system to some extent. Is that right?
It is. It is. Right. Very much so. Because we have limited resources to go in and check an application. The one thing that we do check on after an application is completed, and if an award level is reached, we do check to make sure there are no outstanding violations of any kind of permits that the community would hold with the state. And barring that, we go forward and give the designation, and their name goes up on the website. They get a two complementary road signs. If you've seen Tree City USA signs or Bird City, Wisconsin signs, our signs are similar. Unfortunately, they're a little bit smaller. I've noticed that where they're placed side by side, ours are kind of smaller. So if we can get some more resources, I think we'll try to get bigger signs. They get some logos and materials that we encourage them to use on their official documents to kind of advertise to the world that they are a water star, that water is important to them.
So of these 30 communities that have received this designation, what's sort of the array in terms of cities versus villages versus where they're located in the state? Like, or are you talking about 30 within your region?
No. It's across the state, and they are scattered across the state. Bayfield is a water star. Ashland is a water star. Down here, I mentioned Bristol as one of the earlier water stars, not with that first wave, but followed after that. I'm not exactly sure when. Dane County, Waukesha County, we just awarded the city of Kakana a water star designation, a silver. Johnson Creek, city of Monona more recently. So they are all over. Appleton, I should mention. They do tend to be our larger cities that do have more resources. I think they have the staffing that it's a little easier for them to kind of put somebody on the application. Because the application, it is so comprehensive, it's not really something that a single person can really fill out at a single sitting. It's designed to be a team effort where you get people from multiple departments, so community-wide, really. And that's the way you can maximize your points. You want to know, hey, what are you and Parks doing to manage water resources? Because Parks has an important role depending on how they're managing their land management. Their fertilizer applications, for example, come to mind. Administration should be at the table. Certainly folks in land use and planning, conservation, and definitely folks from your water supply and wastewater. So did that answer your question?
Yeah,
they're
absolutely
kind of scattered around.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, this makes me recall that the city of Racine was, in the not-too-distant past, awarded the title, if you will, as of having the best drinking water, the highest quality drinking water. That wasn't too long ago. And, you know, it seems to me that that certainly would dovetail right into having some sort of a water star rating along with a few other things, you know, because that's quite a thing to receive, given the difficulties that people are having in terms of quality water supplies. And we know that people have been convinced that they have to buy bottled water. But, you know, if your municipality has a water star rating, there isn't any reason for you to buy bottled water necessarily. Also, we know that in places that rely on wells, they're having so much difficulty with water quality and water quantity. And think of all of the things that this application could bring to the forefront for municipalities to manage their water supplies better. Because I'm thinking there are a lot of people who are probably thinking, well, isn't that lovely, a Water Star program? But but the thing is, water is our most precious resource, and it's becoming scarce in places. And even if it isn't scarce, the quality has decreased for a lot of different reasons. So these kinds of programs are, I think, key in getting people to up their game quite a bit, really showing what municipalities and individuals can do to conserve water and also to conserve its quality and improve the quality.
Absolutely. For those of you just joining us, we're talking about water today with not only Nan Calvert, but Andy Yencha, who is the natural resources educator for the Milwaukee County UW Extension Office. So I suspect that that a community that decides to fill out this application, that probably has the effect of prompting some conversations or some sober self-evaluation, or I should think that's one of your hopes here.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we very much hope that those kind of reflective moments occur when they're filling out the application and after they're done. I don't have the resources to do a lot of follow-up with the communities that are either water stars or tried to become them. I do a little bit, though, and I do hear from communities when they complete an application. And the most positive things that I hear are when a community has put in a strong effort to complete the application, and they end up somewhere between bronze and silver. I've never had anybody end up between silver and gold yet where this has happened, but most communities score as a bronze, and they're some number of percentage away from getting that 60% to become a silver. And so then I see, then I get a phone call from them. Hey, what can I do to get those extra points? And to me, that's the best thing that can happen, and that's what the woman who developed the program, Suzanne Wade, I think really wanted to see happen, that the application is inspiring them to do more, motivating them to do more so they can get a higher recognition. Mm-hmm. And I'll put in a plug for the city of Oconomowoc. They got a Water Star designation like a year and a half ago, and they definitely want to move up the chain from bronze to silver to gold. And I know their water utility staff pulled me aside and said, you know, what do we need to do? So then what I do is then I dive into their application. The listeners can't see it, but I've got an application in front of me. It's about 15 pages, double-sided.
Formidable.
And so I will take a few hours to go through this and try to, based on my knowledge of how the community is doing their work, I'll try to point out areas where maybe they can earn those extra points if they add this or change that.
Hmm. I think that would be interesting to probe into that a little bit.
Okay.
First of all, let's find out what the most serious issues tend to be. Let's shift back to doom and gloom for a moment. So in a given community that would flunk that, that application, what are the most serious, let's say, common deficiencies that we are talking about? And I mean by that, what is the situation, and then what are they doing wrong that either causes that or exacerbates that situation?
Well, I don't want to give the impression that the communities that don't achieve enough points to be a bronze are necessarily doing anything wrong. I mean, they're probably not. The state has policies in place that are designed to identify when there is a threat to our water resources, and that happens, without any involvement from the Wisconsin Water Star program. So we don't really if a community goes online, fills out the application, and they don't earn enough points, it doesn't point to them not doing anything. It doesn't point to them doing anything wrong. It just means that they're, for whatever reason, and it's usually comes down to resources, they don't have the resources to go above and beyond what's required by law to really put a shine on their water resource management, if you will. I should come up with a better analogy than shine, something related to water. So maybe the way I can take your question and flip it around a little bit is where do we see communities that do become water stars getting those extra points? And one area of the application, let me make sure I name it right, it's called Community Actions, Programs, and Awards. And another area is Teachers, Youth Groups, Leaders, and Youth Programs. So if a community is going the extra step where they're allowing, let's say, their public works staff or their park staff to go into the community to work with schools, to work with community groups, educate them about the water protection work they're doing. That's an area where they can get a lot of points. And that's what we see our water stars doing, is that kind of work. The higher end level, if a community does have the dedication, if they're really committed to protecting their water resources, we do start to see some projects that are more noticeable actually physically. got my application here. I want to make sure I name the city right. But we had a city a while ago. Now, this is a while ago, but they daylighted a stream. Oh, that was Mukwonago. So Mukwonago, not too far from here, has a wonderful river that flows through it, the Mukwonago River, which is a high-quality, outstanding water resource. And the city recognizes that. They know that this clean river is an asset that attracts people to live there and improves their quality of life. So they did a project where not the river itself, but some of the stormwater discharges to it, probably historic tributaries to the Mukwonago, were covered up underground so that, you know, you could have communities. And they opened those up, daylighted them. So they created habitat. They created a better flow pattern for the river. So when it rained, water didn't flush right in the Mukwonago. It kind of meandered through this re-daylighted stream. So you get extra points for that because that's not required, that kind of work. Doing river cleanups, you know, if your community sponsors a river cleanup or a water quality testing event, those are examples where you can get some points. Yeah.
So you're not really saying that communities that take this and flunk this aren't necessarily interested in this or have concerns about this, but that in some cases communities really find it difficult to find the resources, the manpower, the whatever to make some of these changes, or really have to make a concerted effort to do so. They're not going to just automatically happen on their own.
That's right. Yeah, you nailed it. To do the process as it was designed does take some time, take some resources. I'm available, so I can try to help walk people through the application. But it's just hard at the municipal level. Folks are really, I mean, it sounds trite. It sounds, you know, oh, yeah, sure, everybody's busy. But it's true. Everybody pretty much is busy, and it's hard for, 'cause it's not like they get extra overtime pay for doing this. You know, if you're we have a champion in every community. That's the person who marshals the application through all those departments. And that person has to be organized enough or motivated enough to want to put in the extra time, you know, to round up their colleagues and get them to sit down and really reflect on what they're doing. That's hard to come by, especially in smaller communities. I guess the benefit we have with the smaller communities is they don't have as many departments, so it's a little easier in that sense. Yeah,
less of a jungle.
I think what we struggle with, and if Nan knows me, she knows I'm sort of a glass half full kind of guy, is just getting the word out about our program. We try to attend events around the state of professional organizations like the Wastewater Treatment Operators Organization or Public Works ones, just mention it to their staff there. So we just need to keep, barnstorming around the state to make sure people know this opportunity even exists. Yeah,
right.
And get those bigger signs.
Mm-hmm.
So the initiatives that are sparked by this application or can be sparked by the application, can they be public-private partnerships?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that is something some communities don't recognize, that if they're working with a private group, you know, that can qualify. It doesn't have to be all. In fact, none of it has to be resources that the city is maybe expending extra. But we want to see the cities, the villages, the towns, the counties involved. In fact, some of the questions you mentioned before, how the application is on the honor system, and it is, because sometimes there's a question in there, are you significantly involved in any community water awareness building effort, something like that. So basically, you know, have you ever sat down with a community group and been part of their efforts to talk about doing a stream cleanup? And I think sometimes, so because in Wisconsin we tend to be a modest lot, people are like, well, yeah, you know, we went to that meeting, but it's just because they invited us, and, you know, I've been going, but it's not really a major part of my job. And that's where, if I look at their application, I'm like, no, you've been there at every meeting for the past 3 years. They rely on you for technical advice. You're a significant component, Mr. Public Works guy. And so you should take all those points that are available to you. And so that's how we can kind of help them and encourage those partnerships. The thing I didn't mention, too, just to go back a little bit, too, the other way the application is on the honor system is there was a team of over 40 professionals, engineers, folks from municipal public works departments and drinking water supply departments, water utilities, and many, many others who put the application together. But they recognized that they did not have a total comprehensive knowledge of all the ways local units of government interact with water. So at the end of every section is an opportunity for people to put in their own action. If they feel after they went through the stormwater section that it didn't address something they're doing that they think is really worth sharing and really valuable to protecting water resources, they could write it in there, and then it comes to me, and then I share it with some others, and we determine if they should get points for that. And that's how we build our application and kind of keep it a living document.
Right. So how much of what we're talking about involves the actual work that, for instance, a water utility in a given community does? Or is this more about community outreach efforts and that kind of thing? Because that's a lot of what you've highlighted as we've kind of gone through the document.
Well, I think that's right. That's because of my bias as a community educator. So that's where my technical skills are. I am not a water supply technician. I'm not an engineer. And the application has hundreds of questions in it, and I'm not familiar with all them. I tend to be more comfortable with the stormwater management parts of the application because some of the other work I do involves rural and urban stormwater. So stormwater, folks probably know, but many may not. When we say stormwater, we're just referring to the what happens when the rainwater starts to flow across the land surface. Once it hits the ground and starts to flow, it's called stormwater. And that can create some water quality issues for communities in two ways. One, if it's flowing across land that's got pollutants, soil, nutrients from fertilizer, it can cause problems eventually when it reaches a water body like Lake Michigan in our case. So how are communities managing that? Maybe to give you an idea of some of the where you can earn points with water, with some of these more technical aspects of how communities do things. Snow plowing. How are we cleaning our streets in the winter so they're safe? It used to be that we just salted the heck out of them and plowed the heck out of them. But as budgets have been cut, it's become more and more expensive to maintain a fleet of snow removal equipment. So communities have had to get more sophisticated. And so now they, from what I've heard, talking to people who drive these trucks, if you get in a modern snow plow truck, it is a high-tech device where it's connected by a GPS unit to their main office, and they track their speed and they track their routes so they can minimize backtracking over areas that already plow to save fuel. And they really monitor their application of, we call it de-icing, because it's not just salt anymore. There's other things that we're spreading and how we're spreading it. And so if community, so there aren't a lot of state requirements for how you do that work. So if your community is really going above and beyond to save money, so there's a self-interest here, and that's fine, but if you're doing that, we don't care if it's for self-interest. If you're doing more than minimally required to keep your streets clean from a water quality point of view, we want to honor that. So I guess I could give that there. When it comes to wastewater, we see communities that are trying to get below their required threshold level for compounds like phosphorus. And so if they have put in equipment that is getting them below what's required by their permit, then that's eligible for points too.
Simple as that. So I suppose I'm glad you brought up the matter of self-interest, because actually, when it comes right down to it, this is probably one of those indispensable resources where it is always in our own self-interest to take care of our water and to preserve our water and so on. So one does not even have to be all that environmentally conscious or conservationally sensitive or whatever you want to say to care about this. I mean, even if it is for the most selfish of reasons,
right.
I mean, we all need water. And I think most of us know that we need water. I mean, I don't think it's one of those resources in which we're just coming to grasp how important water is. But maybe it's important that we talk about it more and understand more our own practices and how those can benefit in some ways hurt our own water supply.
Oh, I agree. Ask your listeners just to take a moment of personal reflection to think about why you like living in this area. And I bet high on your list in the top 10 would be a lake or a stream or Lake Michigan. I mean, we value those resources. So if they're not high quality, if they're polluted, if they're marred by litter, if they're stinky, that is something that takes away our enjoyment of where we live. And you know, I'm not the only one who feels that way. I'm a little cog in a giant machine right now that is really recognizing that water in this part of the world is an economic asset, that we are so fortunate to have abundant water, a great lake, and a lot of people who care about those resources. So your listeners have probably heard about the all the water work that's going on in Milwaukee to build that city as a water resource for all kinds of innovative manufacturing and scientific research, and it's just wonderful to see that. Yeah, the up there and down here as well. Racine, just in the news a couple of days ago, was awarded some grant money to begin to redevelop their riverfront. Kenosha has done tremendous work redeveloping their lakefront, and I've been around long enough to know what a transformation that was. And I think we're beginning to really appreciate that if we take care of those water resources, not only are we helping the environment, but we're helping ourselves.
Absolutely. Nan, you were saying that your initial contact with Andy was on a project that involved, I think,
Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network.
Mm-hmm. Right. Tell us more about what that effort was about, because it's probably helps kind of illustrate what this conversation's all about.
Well, at the time that Andy and I worked together with Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network, there was a rain garden initiative. And so it was really working with people at the grassroots level to help them understand how the water that came off of their rooftops and driveways and sidewalks and all of those kinds of things impacted water quality issues far beyond just their own property. And so we worked with businesses and we worked with private individuals and we worked with municipalities to educate them about things that they can do. And it's very simple. We taught people how to install rain gardens or stormwater runoff gardens on their property based on the square footage of the impervious surface on their property using native plants, which are the best things ever for helping to restore our water cycle. So there are so many things that everybody can be doing at the individual level. And then when you join forces with your municipalities to extend those circles, it's just amazing. Look at all of the things that Racine and Kenosha are doing with the Pike River restoration, the Root River restoration. But they can't do it unless we also join hands with them on an individual basis, on a municipal basis. And, man, it's an amazing thing.
Hmm. So, Andy, what is sort of the final word here in terms of various communities? And if somebody listening is in a position to tell us to move forward on doing this, what is it that they should do?
Well, if a community wanted to get involved in the program, they can, you know, like I said, probably the easiest thing to do is just Google Go to your search engine and type in Wisconsin Water Star, and that'll take you to our homepage where you can learn more about the program, see the list of communities that are Water Stars, read a lot of our success stories. We've got a tremendous listing of short, three or four paragraph summaries of the good work communities across Wisconsin are doing that qualify them for these points I keep mentioning. And that's all available before you open up an application. If you decide you want to do an application, you can either go right into it and create an account, which is this is all free, by the way. But if you want to, you know, test it out first, there's an option to create what we call a demo application and go ahead and just get a feel for it that way. You can certainly call me. My contact information is on that website, and I'd be more than happy to talk to people who are interested. That's probably the easiest way to get a hold of me. If anybody who's listening had any other questions about anything I've raised today, I'd be more than happy to talk to folks. Like I said, I'm with Extension, and as we talked about, that is designed to be an extension of the university resources to the public. It's your system. It's your service, so take advantage of it. Call me up.
Very good. Andy Yensha is with the Milwaukee County UW Extension Office, their natural resources instructor. Good to have you here. Great to meet you.
Thank you
for talking about
thank
this.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You bet. Nan, I think you have a couple of calendar events you want to tell us about.
We do. Firstly, I just want to say it is maple sugaring time. It's a great thing to get out there and learn about our history of maple syrup production. So all you have to do is get on the interwebs, as they're called sometimes, and take a look at what's going on at Riverbend Nature Center. Take a look at what's going on at Hawthorne Hollow. There's so many things to do. They often have pancake breakfasts on Sundays. There's just about every weekend in March, and we're, you know, it's quickly flying through March. And once March is over, maple sugaring time is done. So you got to get while the getting's good. Mm-hmm. Okay. Hoy Audubon, Saturday, March 28th at 8 a.m. They're taking a field trip to the Eagle Lake area. It will begin in the large restored wetlands on the Lavin Farm, after which they'll proceed to Eagle Lake. Go to the Hoy Audubon website. If you have any questions, there's a contact number there. Southeast Gateway Group of Sierra Club on March 19th at 6:30 p.m. in room 120 of the Bioscience Building at Kenosha Gateway Technical College. There will be a presentation on Finca Esperanza. The program will feature Dr. Patrick Fafel. He's the project leader at Finca Esperanza, which is an island located on the west coast of Nicaragua. It's an ongoing Carthage College student project, and they deliver medical services, they build infrastructure for safe water supplies, and they carry out ecological studies on flora and fauna of the island. Should be a really fascinating presentation. Here's an early workshop notice. Sino Conservancy will be holding a Cultivating Edible Mushrooms workshop on April 25th. It's a day-long workshop. The fee is $55, and it includes everything that you need. The experts for the day will be Field and Forest Products, Inc., out of Peshtigo, Wisconsin. Part of the day will actually be learning how to inoculate logs and preparing other growing media for shiitake mushrooms, oyster mushrooms, and wine cap mushrooms. The day will include a delicious mushroom-inspired lunch, and hopefully if there's time, there will also be a hike outside. Just go to the Sino Conservancy website and contact Nan at sinokrlt.org to register. And that's it.
Wonderful. Thank you, Nan Calvert. We'll look forward to seeing you next month.
We will be here.
We have two sports-related morning shows coming up over the next couple of days. Tomorrow on the morning show, a sports broadcaster, Ann LaQuarrie. She has been in the field of sports broadcasting for several decades now, and the archives of her longtime radio program, Sports Interview with Ann LaQuarrie, are now available through Hulu. And we recorded a conversation talking about her long career in sports broadcasting, and she began at a time when it was exceedingly rare for women to be involved in the field. And so we had quite an interesting, wide-ranging conversation, which you'll hear tomorrow. And then on Monday, I'm going to be replaying a conversation from way back in 2004 with Tim Rucks. He was for many years the head football coach at Carthage College, and I'm sure many of you have heard by now the news that Coach Rux died the day before yesterday. And we're going to be replaying the conversation that we had back in 2004, the year that Carthage's football team went all the way to the national championship game for Division III football. And it's really something to not only relive that glorious season, but also to be reminded of what a good human being Coach Rux was. So that conversation in its entirety on Monday's morning show. Sunny, breezy, and mild today, warming to a high of 53 degrees, cooler near the lake. Clear and brisk tonight, low down to 33 degrees, but tomorrow, Friday, under partly sunny skies, we warm to 63 degrees. And we'll be either the 50s or the